Morning, saints. Morning, Avati. If you've got your Bibles, we'll carry on with the book of James. So James chapter 3 we're in today. Bit of a gnarly chapter, this one. James chapter 3. All about the tongue. It's been a hard week. It's actually interesting when you start looking at a passage, just and when you're looking at it, you realise just how unruly your own tongue is. And yeah, all the way through the week, I've sort of been reminded of that. Oh, I shouldn't really say that, and shouldn't have said that, and oh, I better stop there. But that's the way it is with our tongue, and all men are the same, and woman. So, so we're going to do James chapter 3 today.
Suffrage day. It's make sure you get it right.
All right. So before we get to chapter 3, like James has brought out a couple of other passages in this book concerning the tongue. And in chapter 1, 20 and 19, he says, "So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath." Also in verse 26, he talked about, "If anyone among you thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this one's religion is useless." So he brings out two things about the tongue before he gets to chapter 3. And when you get into chapter 3, he really goes for the jugular. He doesn't hold any punches, really, in talking about the tongue and the use of the tongue. And really, in its context, he's more on the negative aspect of our tongue than the positive, because we do have both sides to what comes out of our mouth. But in chapter 3, he really talks mainly about the negative aspect of the tongue. They reckon that the average person speaks about 30,000 words a day, which is a heck of a lot. If you contrast that with males and females, I think there'd be quite a difference. I was at a soccer thing in the week, and this lady was talking to me about, she was at some reps thing, and her daughter's in a girls' soccer team. And she was just talking to me about the differences about it, and I thought it was quite hard. Okay, she said that when you got the boys, they finish their game, they got the girls when they finish their game. When the boys finish their game, they have a quick drink, and then they're jumping all over each other and play fighting and kicking balls and shooting goals and things like that. And she said what really astounded her about the girls' soccer team was that they all got into a circle and into a huddle, and they just talked the whole time between games, and they just stayed there. They didn't muck around. And she was cracking up at this, about the differences between the boys and the girls. And there's no doubt about it that I think women do tend to talk a heck of a lot more than men, but that's just the way that God has made us. Yeah, so James, in this chapter, the whole thing is about the tongue. And he starts in verse 1 by going, "My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment." And in the context of it all, it's that a teacher uses their mouth a lot more. And we know that one day we're all going to have to stand before God and give an account for the things that we've done in this life and the things that we've said. And he's bringing in here about teachers, because what a teacher uses is their mouth. And a lot of words are used. So they're saying that there's going to be a stricter judgment upon teachers. In its context, I believe it's teachers of the word. But yeah, there's going to be a stricter judgment for teachers. And then he says in verse 2, "For we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body." Now, I'm quite glad he says this in verse 2. We all stumble in many things, because you really need that when you're going through this chapter. Because one of the biggest ways in which we stumble is the things that really come out of our mouth. And how often you would think, oh, I wish I'd never said that. Or I wish I hadn't said that in such a way. But all the time we are stumbling, you know. We are imperfect, and all the times we are stumbling. And James is saying, for we all stumble in many things. And that is the truth. We need the Lord Jesus Christ because we fall short continually. We all stumble and we all blow it. Those kids are having fun, aren't they? And he goes on to say, if anyone does not stumble in word, in other words, what comes out of their mouth, this man, he is a perfect man. He is able to bridle the whole body. So what James is saying here is what comes out of your mouth is one of the biggest things and the hardest things to actually control. If a man can control that in a perfect way, he's able to control the whole body. There was a gravestone in England that had a little saying on it. It was found, Chuck Swindle talked about it. And it said this: beneath the stone, a lump of clay, lies Arabella Young, who on the 24th of May began to hold her tongue. It's somewhere in England, but I thought that's actually quite a hard case. Because, yeah. And this whole chapter really is about the control of the tongue. And you don't really want to get to the end of your life where then there is some control over the things that you say. We need it here. Yeah. I reckon it takes a baby 2 years to learn how to talk, but an adult 50 years to learn how to keep his mouth shut. Yeah. Okay, so he goes on, he's very descriptive in this chapter, James chapter 3, and he gives a lot of really good practical illustrations. And the first two are in verse 3 and 4. He says, indeed, we put bits into horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body. Look also at ships. Although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot desires. So what James is saying here is that something small actually controls something big. With the ship and the rudder, you think about the size of a ship, and you've got in proportion to the ship, a rudder is tiny, but yet it controls the direction of which the ship goes. The same with the horse's bit. A horse's bit sits on top of the tongue, so it's actually in control over the horse's tongue. And I was talking to a girl that I know that's got horses, because I don't actually know much about horses. And I asked her, I didn't know where the bit actually sat, because I didn't know whether it sat actually under the tongue or on top. And she said, no, it's got to sit on top of the tongue, because then it can go to the back of the jaw. But she said to me that horses have got either soft or hard mouths, and you've got to get the right type of bit for the right type of mouth that the horse has got. And she said, if you've got a really good rider, a good horse rider, he wants a horse with a soft mouth, okay? So that rider could control the horse with his knees and just with real gentle touches on the reins, and the horse is really responsive and it's got a soft mouth. But if you've got a horse with a hard mouth, you need a real sensitive bit to pull that horse into line. And it's very much that way with the Lord and with us, that he wants us really with like a soft mouth, that we're able to be controlled with just really gentle touches, as in a good rider would control a horse. Just real gentle promptings, and it can get that horse to turn whatever way it wants. And James here is talking about these small things that control the whole body. The horse's bit controls a mass, whatever way it wants to go. The ship's rudder does exactly the same. And he's saying that even though this is a real small member of our bodies, it's got masses of control over the things that we do and the things that we say. So you get to verse 5, and he said, even though the tongue is a little member and it boasts great things, see how great a forest a little fire kindles. So he doesn't hold back really when he's talking about the tongue. He's saying even though it's a little member in our bodies, it boasts great things. And unfortunately, one of the things with our tongue is that it likes to talk things up. It boasts great big things about itself and the things that it can do. If you look through most things in the world, even things I was just thinking of, even in sport, you know, most people are talking big, talking it up. One of my favourite sports is golf, you know. And I was thinking about Michael Campbell. You know Michael Campbell. For years he's been, he always talks it up, big time, you know. He boasts about what he's going to do, and most of the time it never really comes to anything. And but he's got this attitude where he's got to talk it up. I read an example of Arnold Palmer. He was another golfer, and it was an example on boasting or overconfidence. And that he was in the 1961 Masters, and he had a one-shot lead heading down the final hole, and he hit his tee shot off down into the middle of the fairway. And he was sitting in a good position, and he noticed one of his friends in the gallery close to him, and his friend motioned him over. So he goes over to his friend, and his friend stuck out his hand and said, "Congratulations, you've done it." And Arnold Palmer took his hand and he shook it, and he said that as soon as he shook his hand, he knew that it was something he shouldn't have been doing. He lost his focus, and he hit his next shot into the bunker. He hit his next shot over the back of the green, chipped up and missed the putt to lose by one shot. And he talked about it 30 to 40 years later, and he said he'd never forgotten that in his mind he'd already won. You know, when that man put out his hand and said, "Congratulations," he said, "I should never have taken that man's hand, you know, but I took it." And He didn't forget that for 30 or 40 years as an example of someone that was boasting beforehand. And there's something always about boasting, that old saying, pride comes before a fall. And it just happens countless and countless times through our lives. Whenever we think we're something or we talk it up, we're always heading for a bit of a fall. And I don't know how it happens naturally, but it just happens. Yeah. But the power of the tongue, it loves to boast and it loves to talk it up. You look back through history, even through some of the world leaders and all of that, there's something really powerful about the use of the tongue. In its context here, James is concentrating on the negative aspect of it, which there is a positive. But if you think about the Hitlers and the people that were used to actually sway masses of people, you know, that they said about him that there was something mesmerizing about the things that he said, how he could sway millions of people. The power of the tongue is actually used like that. We know in Scripture, when it talks about the coming world leader or the coming ruler to come, that he's going to speak great pompous and lying words, that he's going to come with a deceptive tongue to deceive all the nations of the world. So we need to be really aware about what comes out of someone's mouth. If you think about all the damage that has actually been done, countries have been led to war through the use of the tongue and things that were said. Families have been absolutely wrecked, relationships in trouble, all because of what actually comes out of our mouths. And James is saying here, even though it's a little member, it actually boasts great and big and massive things. And then he goes on to liken the tongue to actually a fire. And he says how great a forest a little fire kindles. So he draws an allusion between the two, between the tongue and between fire. Fire is really one of man's greatest friends. And all through history, it has been one of man's greatest friends if it's controlled. There's nothing like sitting around fire or an open fire. There's something really calming about being around an open fire. It does something to you. So it's got the ability to keep you warm and to bring a calmness to you, but also to cook your food. So when it's controlled, it's actually really beneficial. But when it's uncontrolled, it's something completely different. Fire has got the ability to actually reproduce itself if it's given the right circumstances. If it's given the right amount of oxygen and the right sort of material, it can just cause absolute havoc and destruction. And he's likening the tongue to fire. If it's not controlled, it can destroy, it can wreck, and it can cause lots and lots of trouble. On October the 8th, 1871, there was this lady called Mrs. O'Leary, and they reckon a cow kicked over a lantern in her barn. This is what caused the Chicago fires. And all it took was a cow to kick over a lantern. And before it could be contained, they said that it destroyed 17,500 buildings. That's the great Chicago fire of 1871. Just started from a lantern in a barn, but 17,500 buildings it destroyed. Fire is, when it's uncontrolled, is incredibly scary. It's a scary thing. When I used to work in the forestry, we used to go to the burn-offs. They would get all the forestry gangs in, and we would have to cut fire breaks, because what they'd do is they'd come in and we'd start fires in different areas, sometimes by hand, and sometimes they'd have helicopters come in and drop fire in different areas. So they used to get us in, we'd work in twos and threes, and we'd cut fire breaks so that the fire wouldn't be able to jump from one side of the bush to another. And it was really good. It was a good thing to be involved in, but it was a scary thing. Fire spreads incredibly fast, and it's an incredibly scary thing. We would start these fires, and then I remember one time we were by this bank, and because of the wind and everything else, everything changed direction. It just started rocketing. We were sort of under this bank, and we'd made a fire break, and the fire just came roaring over the top of this bank, and all we had to do was, we had enough time to get into the bank, dig a little hole so you could breathe, and the fire would have been sort of, we'd have been here, and it was just throwing itself over the bank and maybe hitting down by where that wall was onto the ground, and we had to stay there until it went down so we could get out. So we were stuck in this bank, just breathing out of a little hole like this, and couldn't go in or out because of the way the fire was, and they were quite, it was really scary, you know. Fire spreads incredibly quick. They used to tell us when we used to go to these burn-offs, you weren't allowed to wear undies with nylon in them, because you know, there's like some undie grundies have nylon inside them, but they would say that if the heat gets that intense, it actually burns inward. And I don't know whether it was here or was overseas, someone was killed just because of wearing undies with high nylon in them. So when the heat got that intense, it burns inward. Yeah. But fire, incredibly, spreads incredibly fast. It's incredibly powerful and incredibly dangerous. And he likens the tongue to fire. You might think it's really strong, but it's got the ability to actually cause havoc. It's got the ability to cause ruin. When you think about the tongue, what is it about the tongue that, in that way, that spreads or causes trouble? For the use of the tongue, could it be likened to that? Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking of when I read that. Gossip, slander, all those types of things that we shouldn't be involved in but love to be. The honesty is that we all like to know what's going on. And that's honest. We like to be in the know. We like to hear what people have done, you know. But gossip is one of those things that spreads. Slander, it spreads. Shouldn't be involved in it, but something within us actually likes to know what's happening, likes to know all the dirty stuff. Our whole system, the Western system, is very much built up on that. All magazines, it's all about the goss, you know? What's happening in this person's life? What's happening in that? What this one's done? It's all about that, you know? It all feeds upon itself. Yeah. Tabloid tongue, yeah. Yeah.
Loose lip sink
chips. Loose lip sink
chips,
yeah.
You know, it's so true. I can see it work. Yeah. Or say, oh, I just don't know about this.
Yeah.
It's very subtle.
Yeah.
Not quite true.
Yeah.
Not necessarily false, but people are so impacted by something. You know,
by things I said, yeah.
Especially
yeah. And the classic is, people say, oh, you're not supposed to know this, but I shouldn't really be telling you this, but keep this to yourself, but now don't tell anyone else about this, but yeah. There was four church leaders that were in the city, and they used to get together and talk about what was happening within their fellowships. And they used to get together and just, you know, discuss the problems that they had. And when they got together, they said, look, we're always talking about the troubles that all the rest of us have got. What's happening with you guys? So one of them started, and then he said, well, I don't really like to say this, but I've got lots of trouble with drink, with all the problems that's going on within the church fellowship and everything else. I actually need alcohol to calm me down. I'm finding it's a calming for me, but I've got a real issue now with alcohol. And they all sort of talked about that for a while, and then another, they got on to the next pastor, and he said, well, actually I've got a real issue with gambling. I just can't help stop gambling, and I love to bet on the horses and things like that. So they all thought, oh, that's not the best. They got on to the next guy, who was very reluctant, and he said, well, I'm actually really attracted to this woman that we've got in the fellowship. And worse than that, she's actually a married woman. And I've been really tempted to take it further. And they're all quite shocked about that. And they got to the last guy, and he was really reluctant. But they coerced him into it, and he said, well, I'm actually a terrible gossip. Yeah. Right, so the tongue. It boasts great things, and see how great a forest a little fire kindles. In verse 6, and the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity, and the tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire by hell. So verse 7 and 8, he goes on to, for every kind of beast and bird, a reptile and creature of the sea, is tamed and has been tamed by mankind, but no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. So he just keeps hammering. He's got nothing positive to say about this member in our mouths. And he says here that man, if you think about the lengths that man goes to actually tame creation, whether it be tigers, lions, crocodiles, snakes, he goes to all of this effort to tame wild beasts of the world, but yet pays little attention to what James would say is the wildest beast of them all, the tongue. And James would say that man has been able to tame all of mankind, but yet this tongue that's within his members, he says no man can tame it. So we get to verse 9, and he's read from 9 to 12, and he says, with it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the image of God. And out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, and a grapevine bear figs? Thus no spring yields both salt water and fresh water. So what he's saying here is that nature and what we have in nature is actually really consistent. You get a spring, it'll either give forth fresh water or bitter, but not both. It doesn't do both. It's either one or the other. You plant a fig, you expect a fig. You plant a grape, you expect a grape. Unless it's been genetically tampered with, you will get what you plant. And what he's saying here is that nature is really consistent. It is what it is, but it's not both. But he's saying man is actually not consistent. Nature is consistent, but man is not. And he says, out of the same mouth proceed, or with it we bless God and Father, and with it we curse men who've been made in the image of God. So his first one is that we've got the ability for both blessing and cursing, you know? And if you know your own lives, it's very much like that. You can come here and sing songs and about how good God is and bless God, and on the way home, if someone cuts you off, or someone steals your car park, you've got an entirely opposite reaction, you know? Or if someone insults you, what do you do? How do you react when you're insulted? Do you do that good old Christian thing and get even and insult back? Give them what for so they won't do it again? Yeah. Man is not, he is not consistent. He will bless and he will curse. Out of the same well comes both the real water and the bitter water. And he says that these things ought not to be. When talking about insults, I read about Winston Churchill the other day. Apparently Winston Churchill, even though he was a wonderful leader, needed for that time, apparently he was a classic with insults. And he never backed down, and he would just give insult for insult. And I read he was always having trouble with this lady Astor. I don't know who she was, but she saw him in the elevator one day, and she said, "Winston, you're drunk." And he said, "My lady, you're ugly. Yet tomorrow I will be sober." And I read that, I thought, it's unbelievable. Apparently he was always having trouble with this lady. Eh?
Give you the history on it.
Does he know more on it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good. Lady Esther. Yes. So out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. And that is one of the things, really, with that we've got the ability to do both, to bless and to curse. And James is saying here that it shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't be that way. Our mouths should be used in one way, really, to bless and to build up and to edify and to encourage and all of those things. And he's saying that if it's not controlled, it's going to be like fire, or it's going to be like these things that just cause trouble. So you've got to watch your tongue. Someone once said, watch your tongue, it sits in a wet place. Was it Bob? That it's easy to slip. Yeah. You can see why David in Psalm 141 said, "O Lord, set a guard over my mouth and set a watch over my lips, that I may say no evil thing or cause any trouble." Yeah. So it goes on, and it's from verse 13 through to the end of the chapter. He gives really the answer to a bitter tongue. And he talks about, "Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom." And the rest of this chapter he talks about what the two different types of wisdom, and how that actually relates to us and what comes out of our mouth. And he says, if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, and demonic. So he's talking to believers, and he's talking about that there shouldn't be any bitter envy or any factions in your life. Bitter envy is really just to begrudge others of the success that they have found. That's what envy really is. It means to have a resentful attitude toward others that things may have gone good for them, but you resent them because of that. To have bitter envy or to begrudge. And the other one he talks about, self-seeking or factions. And really, if you've got these in our lives, either a bitterness or envy or factions. Factions is strife, it's rivalry, it's selfish ambition. All of those things, he says, will cause trouble. And he says that if you're concentrating on these things, or if these things are ruling our lives, then this wisdom is not from above. In other words, it's not Christ-centered, it's not from Christ. He says it's earthly, it's sensual, and it's demonic. In other words, it's of this world, it's governed by your senses, how you feel, or possibly it's even demonic, that satanic principle that lies within this world that has no time for God, no time for truth, or no time for his ways upon the lives of his people. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and everything evil are there. There would actually be quite a bit to do on that verse, but maybe another time. Verse 17, he actually contrasts that wisdom with another one. And he says, but the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then it's peaceable, it's gentle, it's willing to yield, it's full of mercy and good fruits, it's without partiality and without hypocrisy. Now what James is actually saying here is that whatever it is that we are feeding upon and whatever it is that we are putting into our lives, that'll be what comes out. If it's earthly wisdom, if it's self-seeking wisdom, all of that stuff, then you're going to have trouble. If that's what you're feeding on, like Jesus also said, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So whatever it is that you're putting in, that's what will probably come out. And he contrasts these two types of wisdom, okay? One that is just earthly and is self-centered, which results in strife and factions and rivalry and everything that you've got to get your own way. Then he says there's going to be confusion, you're going to have trouble in the things that you are trying to do. But, and he contrasts heavenly wisdom or the true wisdom. And he says, but the wisdom that is from above is first pure, peaceable, gentle, and willing to yield. Mum gave me a good example of this. My uncle, the other day, he was driving his car around a roundabout, and a 15-year-old guy came along and smashed into the side of him. And it wasn't my uncle's fault, it was the youth. The youth was doing something he shouldn't have been doing. And so he smashed into the side of my uncle, and going through the whole process, this youth has got no insurance, and his mother had no insurance. And my uncle, he volunteers for the police force. So he had the police on his side, and they were wanting to press charges against this family because they were clearly in the wrong. And my uncle apparently asked the Lord about it, what he should do. And the Lord said to him, I've forgiven you of much, and I want you to be merciful. Now, my uncle had every right to go around there and either demand what he could out of the people, or to take it a step further and press charges to try and get something out of the family. But he went to the Lord about the scenario, and the Lord said to him, look, you've been shown mercy, and I want you to show mercy also. So he is going to go to this boy and say, look, I'm prepared to bear the cost, and I think it's something like $1,500 to repair his car. I'm prepared to take this on the chops. I also have been done wrong stuff in my life that I've got away with, but I've also been shown mercy, and I want to show that to you. And he's going to do that. And that there, to me, is the wisdom that comes from above. Now, if my uncle had been self-seeking, he deserves the money. He's not in the wrong. If he had been self-seeking, you would find two very different scenarios with what comes out of his mouth when he approaches this family. But James here is saying the wisdom that is from above is, first of all, it's pure, meaning that it's undefiled, it's clean. The second thing it says about it, it's peaceable. Now, wisdom in the Bible is actually personified in Christ. In 1 Corinthians 1:30 it says, Christ has become unto us wisdom from God. So all of these things are an attribute of who Christ is. And he says that it's, the second thing about this wisdom, it's peaceable. In other words, it promotes peace and actually tries to heal divisions. The third thing is it's gentle. In other words, it's considerate, it's kindly. It's willing to yield. In other words, it's teachable, it's not proud, it's not stubborn. The fourth thing is it's full of mercy. In other words, it can overlook wrongs. It can show forgiveness where forgiveness is needed. And then it says it's without partiality, which is there is no respecter of men. All men are the same. And without hypocrisy. And when I was reading that, when Mum told me about my uncle, I thought, that there is a really good example of someone who has received wisdom outside of himself. He's not reacting the most natural way to react, but he's actually showing mercy, and he's showing love, and he's showing forgiveness, and he's actually taking the cost upon himself when he actually doesn't have to do it. So yeah, so when you get to this whole chapter is really about the control of the tongue. And you would think that James would just say, speak nice things, or there's stacks of proverbs about the use of the tongue, but he doesn't. He goes into wisdom. And I think he does it for a reason, meaning that whatever we are feeding upon, and wherever we're receiving our thoughts and our food and our direction, then that also will come out of the mouth. And if we're feeding upon what the Lord desires us to do, and the Lord's ways, and what Scripture teaches us to do, then what comes out of our mouth will be bridled. But if we are self-seeking, and we've got to have our own way, and everything that goes with that, then trouble will come forth. Yeah. Is there anything else in this chapter that any other guys can see?